Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Today on The Grave Talks, Angel Medium, a conversation with Michael Terzi. Michael Terzi grew up understanding early that he had what some would call a gift. Although not initially feeling like it was a blessing, he slowly began to understand and accept that something was different. As he grew into adulthood, he would come to fully understand his connection to the other side, specifically angels. Michael would eventually turn his life into being a conduit for communicating messages he could not possibly know from angels to the living who needed them most.
Well, that's actually pretty interesting, I feel, because I've talked to a lot of people now over the few years that I've been doing stuff as an angel medium. And one of the things that I realize is that there is, like you said, there's categories. There are people that have it in the beginning in childhood and it continues throughout their lives. And then there are some people that have some sort of experience early on and then kind of wean off of it later. They explain things away. Life happens as a teenager or a young adult. And then all of a sudden things blow up again in adulthood. And that was kind of my story, was that in the beginning, when I was, let's say, around 11, I had my first, I guess, looking back on it, of course, paranormal experience, where I did have a spirit that was that came to me in my room. And it was obviously extremely scary at the time. And I just didn't know what was going on. And I told my parents about the experience, and they were able to actually believe me at the time, which was surprising to me. And because I was currently going to Catholic school, they went and actually had a priest come and do a blessing around the home. Whether or not that helped a lot or not, I don't really know, but I didn't have a lot of experiences with actual spirits. From then on, I had a couple of little, I would say maybe there was one precognitive experience that I had where I felt as though I saw something that was going to happen and then it actually started to happen and I was able to almost prevent it when I was around 12 or 13. And then I had little experiences here and there, but you know, we all try to explain those things away. And as I tell people, you know, I was always in the science community, I guess you could say. I was always interested in biology, chemistry, you know, the health sciences. That's why I was at one point going to be a physical therapist. And then I was also an EMT. I worked as an EMT. And then I eventually went into optometry. And so all the logical things, all the things that a lot of people would say are more rooted, I guess, in the body and reality, I was very much into. And I always tried to explain away the little things that would happen. And then when I was in medical school, when I was in optometry school, that was when things really started getting crazy. And it was when I was actually taking exams, when I was in school with all of these other students, with all of my peers. And there was a lot of anxiety, a lot of tension. And I have always been kind of a kickback kind of guy. I study for my exams, and I always say to myself, ever since through undergrad, I would always say, pass, I pass. If I don't, I don't. Let's just, I did my best. You know, it was one of those things you kind of just keep yourself calm. And that always served me very well. Well, then as I went through all these exams, all these classes, I started getting more and more anxious. And I knew that it just didn't feel like me. And I was getting these thoughts in my head, even like, I'm going to fail this exam. I need to change this answer from A to B, you know, little things like that. And I'm like, these thoughts are not mine. Why am I thinking these things? What's going on with me? Am I going crazy? And I would even have panic attacks while I was driving home because I had a very long commute going from back and forth from school to home, where I would be having these anxiety or depression attacks as I was driving, just banging the steering wheel and even crying at some points. And it was just an overload. And that went on for maybe almost a year before I finally told my wife about it. And she's, first of all, got mad at me for not telling her sooner. And then she kind of looks down and she goes, well, maybe you're an empath. And I said, well, what's an empath? Mm-hmm. She said, oh, I don't know. Let's look it up. And it was just one of those things that she just kind of got. She felt as though there was something to it. And we looked it up, and obviously still in medical school at the time, I was like, oh, I have all of these quote unquote symptoms. You know, I looked at it like that. And even though they're not really symptoms, obviously it's not a disease. I still saw it like, oh, this is me. I'm experiencing all of these things. So I had to come to grips with the fact that, okay, I'm an empath. I'm feeling all the emotions, energy, and as I mentioned, even thoughts of other people as if they were my own. And I just didn't know how to deal with it. And so then as I started to try to find local classes around, which a lot of them unfortunately didn't really help a lot, I was trying to come to grips with this particular, at the time I saw it as a curse, but I would eventually see it as a gift, obviously. And I was trying to learn how to understand it and even shut it down because I just wanted to be a doctor. I didn't want to have to feel all these things. I didn't want to have to go down this road. It was something that I had never really believed in before or gave a lot of credence to. And then as I continued with it, the more I tried to shut it down, the stronger it got, to the point where I eventually all of a sudden saw my first human spirit. And that, again, was a scary moment, but I wasn't paralyzed with fear. It was almost as if it was somebody there, but I could only see their shadow. So it wasn't like they were coming through trying to scare me. In fact, they were trying to communicate. But the only thing that I could hear was kind of like a Charlie Brown teacher. You know, like, wah, 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 wah. I couldn't hear their voice. And so I tried to talk with him as much as I could. And he would send me messages kind of visually and like in my head. And it was a very strange experience. And then from then on, every now and then, I would see a human spirit. Well, obviously, things got really intense. Being an empath, now seeing these human spirits, trying to pass board exams. This is just getting to be too much. It was really surreal. And I got really upset one day. And I was talking with my wife again, who has always been there and a great support to me. And she was trying to help me through all of this. And I was getting really angry. And then all of a sudden, I saw this amazingly brilliant white light that just came in through my window on my second story. So it was just really amazing and intense, but it was also very calming and very comforting. And I got chills going through me as I was going through this. And then my wife's like, what are you seeing? What's going on? You're crying. And I touched my face and I saw all these tears just streaming down my face. I wasn't even aware that this was happening. And I felt this unconditional love. And that's when he said to me, I am your guardian angel, as this light started to take form. And it was huge and the light filled the room. And I had to even, I couldn't even look at the light. I had to actually literally look away with my physical eyes, even though she couldn't see it. It felt so intense. And as it started to subside and I started to see his form, he told me, you know what? This is who you are. You have to stop it. Accept who you are. These are your gifts. And I'm going to help you to be able to work through this and become who you're meant to be. And from then on, I saw my wife's angels. I even came out of the spiritual closet, per se, to my parents and my family. And I gave them readings. And then it just kind of snowballed into giving Perfect Strangers readings. And now using this for readings with investigating with the paranormal, I use these gifts now to try to empower and help people with their issues as well.
A lot to unpack there. And I want to take a few steps back and then kind of get back up to where you have left off. I want to go back to what you had said initially when you were going through the experience of having a priest coming through your home as a child, came in to bless it. As a child, after having that experience, put yourself back in the shoes of little Michael. What was going through your mind at that moment in time? Not looking at it retrospectively, but at that moment in time, what were you thinking?
What I was honestly thinking, I remember, because it's funny you ask that, because I am writing a book about some of my experiences and a few things. So I have actually looked at that. And one of the things that I was thinking was, first of all, what was that? What happened to me that night? Why was it coming to me? What was really going on? Why had I not seen anything before that? Just it was a lot of why. And then as he was going through, I was thinking, I hope this does help, because it did scare me. I couldn't sleep that night at all. And luckily it didn't happen the next night or the night after, but it was one of those experiences that was a first time meeting with the paranormal. And I just was like, I don't know why. I really want to know why, but I really hope this helps. And I think it was because that nothing did happen even after that first experience, and then after he came, that things just kind of subsided in my mind until I had that particular experience later on when I was about 13 or so.
When you look back on that moment with your parents and talking to them about it after the fact, as you grew older, what was going through their minds at the time when they brought the priest in to bless it? Was it just kind of, you know, this is what you do when something like that happens, and then they had experience either with it themselves or other people? I know it's fairly common in some churches. When you buy a new house, you have the priest come and bless it. It doesn't have to be haunted. It's just a ritualistic type thing. What was their kind of thinking and process to bring a priest in when that happened and to make that actually a reality and not just poo-pooing it as a lot of parents would do of, oh, it's a bad dream. You're just, it's your imagination running wild.
Yeah, it was. I actually, of course, had to talk to my parents about it afterwards when I first started opening up again in adulthood. And one of the things that they told me later on, because they didn't want to tell me about it when I was younger to try to scare me or anything, I think, was that my mother has had experiences in the past with the paranormal, just a couple of them growing up in New York City, both of my parents. My mother had a couple of instances where she had believed that she encountered a spirit. And my father, I guess, told me that my grandmother, that who I never got to meet, unfortunately, she passed away when I was about two. His mother was actually into the spiritual and the paranormal a little bit, also kind of as a type of energy healer, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I had no idea any of this as I was growing up. And so when they first heard about this happening, their instinct was not to just say, no, this can't be it. No, he's just, making it up. They actually did say, okay, this could be something.
Yeah.
And they wanted to be able to support me in it, especially to make me feel okay, because I don't remember how upset I was when I came to them, but I know that obviously they had enough of a reaction to the point where, okay, yeah, he's experiencing something here. This is an issue. We can't just say, no, nothing happened, and then send him back. We want to make sure that he feels comfortable enough. And this is something that is just a reaction to do. Obviously, like I said, I was in Catholic school. It was something that they just thought, okay, let's bring in a priest, because they didn't have anyone else that they would know to turn to, I guess you could say.
Sure, sure. I mean, and I think to have that reaction that your parents did, it would take some experience in that world to do that. I grew up, I have Lutheran and Catholic on both sides of my family. And I know one side where they would, that the priest would come and bless the home, and one side where that just really wasn't a thing, but it was, I have a lot of people on each side where they believe in this stuff, that it's real, that this is just kind of a fact, but plenty who don't as well. And unless you have close personal experience, whether it's your parents with their parents or some family member where it's like, look, this stuff does happen. Many times, you know, it would not go down the road that you got to go down of support and love and being, accepted. This is going on. It's not just in your head. Let me ask you about when you got to the point of, you know, you're talking to your wife and your wife suggests maybe you are an empath. You're going through medical school. You're studying, you know, the sciences of everything. And part of medical school is not the study of ghosts or spirits or angels necessarily.
Oh, no. So if that was an elective, I must have missed it.
Exactly. So when how are you squaring the idea of being an empath with everything that you're learning in medical school for your career, and with these, you know, these other areas that are kind of coming in, you know, more alternative sciences, alternative medicines, if you want to call it that, that, you know, they're not necessarily in line with what you're learning about and how one would handle that if someone came to someone saying these things, you'd be looking for a medical explanation. I mean, empath, is empath even a medically recognized term in terms of describing what someone is feeling?
I wouldn't say that literally somebody being called an empath would be something that would be medically recognized.
Sure.
I know that obviously people recognize empathy.
Yeah.
You know, we can say that I'm empathetic towards your plight. You know, there's something going on with you. I feel for you, man. You know, there are people that recognize that as something that people will say.
Sure.
Obviously, as a medical thing, no. Being an empath is not something that people would look into. And it was difficult for me to reconcile at first because it didn't make a lot of sense that I would be literally feeling other people this strongly and have this much energy coming to me to even feel it physically sometimes, you know, to have upset stomachs or headaches or feeling pressure around my head. It was a lot. And for some people, they might say that, yeah, maybe you were having anxiety or depression or panic attacks or, but it wasn't, I knew that it wasn't anything that came from me. I was literally taking it in from other people. And when I heard the explanation of an empath, it made sense. It was hard for me to obviously continue to believe in it because of the experiences that I've had, obviously, as learning to become a doctor. But when nothing else can explain what you're going through, sometimes you have to go with the unexplained. And this was something that I looked at as, okay, this is the most logical explanation, even though it's not something that a lot of people would recognize as a valid explanation. People don't understand until they actually start going through it.
Sure.
And I didn't get it until I really started. So that's how I kind of reconciled it was, okay, nothing else makes sense. I'm not having this. I'm not usually like this. This is what they say an empath is. I'm going to go with this. And as I explored it, it made more and more sense.
Yeah.
Learning more and more about it. You know, knowledge is obviously always power. And
sure.
If you can understand it and accept those things about yourself, which it took me a good while to do, you can turn these things that may cause us issues into things that could actually give us strength to be able to improve upon ourselves and to become more of who we are.
Sure. And obviously anyone, you know, can be susceptible to anxiety and depression. I myself deal with it. My wife deals with it, who's a co-host of our other program. I have several family members. I know the world well. But with that, you know, I on our other program, we have listeners that write in their stories to us. And over the last 8 to 10 years of doing that program now, I've probably heard tens of thousands of stories. And one of the resounding things that we see quite frequently is someone who is suffering from anxiety, depression, you know, then sometimes it, you know, stems into substance abuse and many other things. And then the world of paranormal, ghostly things, unexplained things sometimes mixes in there. And sometimes you have to look at it, is that the chicken before the egg type thing? Did the anxiety and depression act as almost a catalyst, an antenna, a big open for business sign to something negative on the other side to attract itself in to that individual? Or is it the other way around? Did something negative attach to someone and then bring in this negative, this pulling of one down, and then leading literally to clinical type depression and anxiety? What's your views on all of that? And I know I just threw a big ball of stuff at you.
Well, I'll try to hit it in order here. Okay. So what I feel as though is that both theories have a lot of fact to it, because I have encountered, like, we've done a lot of paranormal investigations and clearings and things like that in people's homes with the group that my wife created, Rise Paranormal. And so I have encountered a lot of people that have had similar experiences like you described. Some of them, I would say maybe 60 to 70% of them, unfortunately, were ones where people were down. They were depressed. They had a lot of sadness or anger, or they were going through a really tough time and they were in a dark place.
Yeah.
And then unfortunately that does sometimes attract a negative spirit to come in. Now, attachments I use very sparingly, because as I have encountered attachments, and not even going into possessions, attachments are actually very rare. So a lot of the times they may come in and they're just around the home and they feel that person's energy, the spirit. And they can kind of correlate with that emotion. They can sympathize with it because they're sad or angry or depressed. And because of that, they almost, as if the human and the spirit almost have this similar emotional journey that they're going through. And when I encounter those, you know, it's hard because I have to then talk with the person and help them understand, but then also help the spirit as well. So there is that one. But then there are times where people may come into a home and there may have already been a spirit there. And yeah, that does happen, where there may be a negative spirit there that can affect the other people. But I always tell people, whether they believe it or not, or even practice it after I tell them, I don't know, but we control the energy around us. Any kind of negative entity that would come my way, and it's not just because I'm an angel medium, anyone can do this. Any energy, that negative energy that comes into my energy field, that comes in around my body, I control. So this negative entity that could be in my home may be sad or angry, but I may feel that as an empath, but I'm not going to let that control me. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to let that change who I am and how I am and how I act and the things that I do, or even the people in the home with me or my family. We can all control that. Whether people believe it or not and try to practice it, that's of course up to the person, but I have seen it work with many people. And so going both ways, yeah. It can be the person being depressed, or it can be the spirit was like that and the person just didn't know their strength in order to help themselves protect themselves.
When you have something like that and someone is being affected by a negative energy that's around a house or something that's attached to them, or following someone, and that individual the living individual is feeding off of that as an empath. They're feeling that negative energy, and in turn, it ends up over time pulling them down into a depressive state that, you know, would need treatment even if you delete the energy or the entity out of the picture. That person has been conditioned so far down that it's going to take some time to get them back up. Do you see a cycle sometimes where when one is trying to deal with this and get better as a living human being, that both are not addressed, both the living person and the energy that is out there, where, okay, we got the person on a good positive track, but the negative energy is still lurking over here? Or vice versa, the negative energy over here has been addressed and that's been pushed out through the means that are used. But the person is still sitting there and they've already been pulled so far back and so far down that now that the negativity that lies within them, the depression that they're suffering from, ends up pulling other things back in, where you know, it's like you fixed two of the car's tires, but the other two are still flat. Do all, basically, do both sides really truly need to be addressed to get results that are going to be long lasting?
Unfortunately, yes. Now, it depends on the case, obviously. You know, each individual case is different. There have been ones where the person has been feeling some sadness, a little bit of depression here and there, but nothing major. And then we take care of the negative entity that's there. We help them move on into the light. And because their vibration raised, they're good, the spirit, and they move on with their angel. And then the person who was living, who had the issue, now feels a lot better because that heaviness is gone, that negativity that was around them and their family has now subsided and has moved on. Mm-hmm. So they are usually okay. But then there are some, like you mentioned, and you said a couple of times, because I've encountered a few attachments. And when we have an attachment, that's a really, really hard case, because usually that attachment has been going on for usually at least a year. And so you have this negative entity that has had their, I guess you could say, for lack of a better description, their spiritual cords in, you know, their hooks in the person. And it's, and the person even feels as though it's a parasitic and symbiotic relationship. The one thing that I tell people about how to distinguish if you just have a negative energy in the home and it's just around you, or you have an actual attachment, is something that I've seen in all three attachment cases that I've done, because like I said, there are actually rare. Mm-hmm. Is I tell the person, because they call us in, they actually call us in for help.
Sure.
And then I go to them and I say, hey, you know, I know there is a male energy here, very, very negative. We want to be able to help them move on. And so they can move on, and then you'll start to feel better and your family will feel better. And then they look at me and they say, well, what if I don't want it to go? And then that's when the first time I encountered that, my angel came in and told me, this is an attachment. Mm-hmm. They know something is wrong. They want the help. But then when faced with this entity leaving, they almost feel as though they will be losing something, because they've been together for a certain amount of time, and they almost feel like they need that negative entity there with them. But they know that it has to go. It's a battle inside of them. Yeah. And so with these usual attachment cases, I have to talk with the entity itself, and I have to use my abilities or my gifts as a medium and angel medium to be able to help the spirit leave and detach from the person, usually, because the person themselves, it's an ongoing process afterwards. We have to help them, talk with them, give them any kind of resources that they would need to be able to get out of their depression or to try to help themselves so that, yeah, things don't come back. When we have those really strong cases, we don't just abandon the person after we help the spirit move on. We want them to know that we're here as a support. I always like to teach, I like to help, and I want to be there for that person. And we don't charge for these things, because when people are going through these issues, they need the help. And I don't want this to be contingent on them paying me as some sort of amount of money in order to receive that help.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we try to do everything we can, but if it goes beyond our scope, we do give out different resources for help that they could actually gain on a physical and emotional level that I might not be able to provide.
Thank goodness we're not in the world yet in the paranormal area of, well, I'm sorry, Blue Cross Blue Shield doesn't cover that under your plan. That's the other plan. That's the upgrade over there. But it's only two visits a year, and they have to be 30 minutes on the dot, or we're not going to cover it. That's just mental health, you know, nothing important.
Yeah, exactly.
Does an attachment have a choice in the matter of basically unhooking themselves from the living? And if so, how do you go about having that talk, that conversation, that communication with it to make it leave?
Yeah, it's difficult. Yes, they do have that choice. Whenever I talk about attachments, it's usually human spirits. 97%, 98% of the cases that we get are human hauntings. It's rare to be able to find something that the angels call the fallen, what most other people might call demons. Mm-hmm. It's rare to be able to have those cases, although I have encountered them before. A lot of people might mistake demonic cases for something that are called human spirits that are called followers. And though these are really negative human entities that have passed on, but they haven't gone to the light, and they've encountered a demon, they've encountered an actual fallen angel. And that demon has manipulated them into working with them, almost kind of like they're creating some sort of like army for themselves. You know, like they send out their followers to do their bidding. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, these followers can attach to people. It depends on the individual spirit, of course, but they can choose to not, and they can choose to unhook. How I go about talking with them is just like how I would talk with a really angry living person, because we forget a lot of the time that most of the spirits we encounter are people. They are human. The difference is that they died in a certain circumstance or in a certain state of mind to keep them from being able to find that light, that love, and to move on into the light so that they can continue their path. They get stuck. And because of the fact that they're stuck in this anger and then negativity, they start to look for other ways that they can gain strength or that they can gain energy or that they can gain power that they're missing inside of them. And so sometimes that does result in an attachment. Like I said, rare, but it does happen. And when I do that, I talk with them and I get their story. As a medium, I connect with them. I even connect with the spirit's angel. Some people don't understand that spirits also have angels, but those negative spirits are just so negative and so far down. It's almost as if they're lost in some sort of really deep valley and they're in the darkness in the woods. And the angels are up on the mountains and they're trying to find them, call out to them, but the person's not looking to them. They're just deep within their own psyche. Mm-hmm. And so as I talk with them, I'm also talking with their angels and getting their story and learning what's going on with them. And then as we talk with them, we empathize. I use that energy as an empath to be able to take in that negativity. And I do something that my angel taught me about, transmuting that energy, because energy can't be created or destroyed. It just changes forms. So if they have a lot of negative energy coming at me, I can take that in, change it within myself, and give it back to them as a positive light. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not magic. This is just something that I help to support them. The spirits actually do their own work, and they realize the error of their ways. They usually realize what it is that they did wrong, how they can come to grips with their reality, and to be able to look to their angel. And once they do, they can move on into the light. They can now see the light, and their vibration, their resonance rises to the point where that positivity ends and they unhook or they leave that home because they know that they're not doing any good there for themselves or anyone else. And then, like I said, if it is an attachment, then we work with the person afterwards.
That wraps up the first half of our conversation with Michael Terzi about him being an angel medium and his experiences. In part two of our conversation, do human attachments always move into the light when someone helps them move on, or can they be cast to a dark place if they are just that negative? Can someone identify if they've had a past life, and how so? When someone enters into a new life after passing through reincarnation, is it always in what we would identify as the future, or can someone reincarnate into the past? When Michael saw his first human spirit, what was going through his mind? Was he starting to think he was having a breakdown or suffering from some sort of disorder, or did he accept that he was in fact having a supernatural encounter? And what was it like the first time Michael gave a reading to someone outside of his home that truly solidified in his mind that, yes, in fact, he is communicating with the other side? Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.